Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is presented by my delightful and important and vital Patreon members, where you can become a member by going to patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Again, that's patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Become a member, make a $5 a month donation. It's like a cup of coffee a month, just like any other subscription to the New York Times, the New York Post, Slate Magazine, the Chase Thomas Podcast. We're all one and the same. That's what people are saying. And you can support the show by doing that today. It would be great in continuing to put out as much content as I am. Because guess what? I'm doing 7 pods a week, sometimes more. We are doing interviews with pro wrestlers, former NBA players, NBA GMs, coaches, college ADs. We are doing movie reviews on Sundays that you can find with Musée and Thomas. Every single Sunday, we're reviewing a different movie. Monday through Friday, we're getting NBA, NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, team beat writers. You're getting pro wrestling analysis. You're getting the sports reporters. What is it? I don't even know. America's favorite sports writers? I think that's what we're calling it. On Friday, with some of the best sports writers and sports thinkers on the internet today. We are doing all this every single day. New content every day. You know what else I'm doing every day? I'm writing every day. You can read my Monday Atlanta sports column that comes out every Monday. On Tuesdays, you can read my Monday Night Raw recap. On Wednesday, you can read my Impact Wrestling recap. On Thursday, you can read, hold on, let me check my notes here. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I'll come back to it. On Friday, the Friday mailbag. Oh, I know what I'm doing on Thursday. We're doing the AEW Dynamite review. On Friday, we're doing the Nobody Asked mailbag, like I said. Maybe that'll turn into an actual mailbag. If you would like to send those, you can do so by going to emailing me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. You can read my SmackDown recaps on Saturday morning. You can read my newsletter that goes out every Saturday morning. We'll eventually have a tiny letter or Substack once I get that pesky P.O. box, but I will update you all soon. And then Sunday, volunteers. Yeah, every Saturday. Guess who's in Knoxville? Me. Guess who'll be covering Tennessee football, Tennessee basketball for the next several years? Maybe ever. Me. Vols. Go read my stuff. You can read all of it at chasethomaspodcast.com. I would highly encourage you to check it out, chasethomaspodcast.com/page-11, where you can read all my stuff, get access to all of my episodes, all that good stuff. go to Apple, subscribe there, leave me 5 stars, leave a review, help the show continue to grow and move into that top 200 permanently on Apple Podcasts, subscribe on Spotify, tell a friend, share the show. This intro is 3 minutes long. That's entirely too long for an intro. Too long. And I just did a long pause. I don't know why. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, boys and girls. My name is Chase Thomas, and you are listening to The Full Ride on the Chase Thomas podcast. I am up here in Knoxville, Tennessee, down there in Decula. I'm going to say it right because I'm a professional now. Matt Green, fellow UNG alumni, Matt Green. Matt, good evening, sir. How are you?
Chase Thomas, sir. It is a pleasure. It's a great Sunday. I'm just looking forward to talking about a great day of college football yesterday.
The Falcons just got demoralized, and they fall to 0-5 for the first time since 1997. I'm recording this in my work done Falcons jersey. And then yesterday I think was worse because like the Falcons have just beaten it out of me at this point where like it is what it is. Tennessee won the first half. It was a beautiful thing. Garantano was playing perfect, 11 for 13, almost 200 yards passing, 2 TDs, dropped some bucket bombs to Josh Palmer that I put out in my preview, and just thinking about like how this game would be won is if he would get some time to get shots downfield, because I thought ultimately it would come down to the offensive line play and the 4 or 5 stars versus the Georgia defensive front, because if they won the line of scrimmage, then Tennessee was going to win this football game. They won it in the first half, and the second half they did not. And my group,
hold on. I'll let you finish. Just keep going.
Because I feel like I need to get all this off my chest because I've been sitting on it for 24 hours. And I was nervous going into the half because Georgia had that obvious terrible straight at the middle over and over again with Zamir White from the shotgun. Like, he's awful, and he's not good anymore. He has no knees. I don't know what you're doing down there in Athens, because you have guys like McIntosh and then Milton, who comes out of nowhere, this like Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley double whammy, who just pops in there and is just like impossible to bring down and breaks like 9 tackles on a huge run late in this game. You have options.
Kendall Milton really did flash some Nick Chubb, Todd Gurley esque
abilities. He's gonna be a beast. Like, you can go ahead and pencil that one in. He's gonna drive me nuts for the next several years. I can already tell.
The stable of backs that Kirby recruits, man. Kendall Milton, 5-star out of Cali.
But they keep playing Zamir White, and Zamir White just, he stinks, and he runs, and like, these play calls were terrible. Todd Monken did not call a good game in this game. George Pickens squirts a water bottle like he's peeing on Jarrett Garantano for a flag, and then they don't go to him in the third quarter. Like, he's still an idiot. Like, he might be the dumbest college football player I've seen in a long time. I thought my dad was a little too hard on him over the tech stuff, and my Georgia fan family were a little too hard on him, because I'm like, he's still the best player on your roster. He's young. He's just young, cocky, and good. And then you're like, he just might be an idiot. He's just stupid. And I'm like,
that was a super immature play.
Like, Jarrett Garantano got up, and he felt good about it. And he was evading pressure really well. He saw the blitzes coming, and the first half he was just evading it. And when he has time, Jarrett Garantano can dissect you and pick you apart. Jim Cheney's offense is dependent on Jarrett Garantano having time. If he has time in the pocket, he's going to find those bucket bombs to Palmer or Keaton or whoever. That is his game. And that is what he was able to do through 2 weeks. And that's how they were able to win 8 straight games, is great offensive line play, him having time and able to pick defenses apart. That did not happen in the second half. And he made some bad plays. Like, the one thing that I will say that fell on him is the interception, because he threw it off his back foot. That was stupid. He shouldn't have done that. But the fumbles, he's getting blindsided sacked. They're ripping the ball out. Like, when the pocket's collapsing like that over and over again, and Ojulari, whatever his name is a monster.
Ojulari.
Yeah, he was eating Cade Mays and Morris's lunch on the right-hand side. And that was the game. Like, Garantano at that point was just seeing ghosts. And I don't blame him. That offensive line just got destroyed, and that cannot happen if you want to beat Georgia. And the defense did everything they could. Totoa had a great game. Taylor had a big save there, and Bryce Thompson had some good plays. Like, the defense did everything they could. DeAndre Johnson getting kicked out for that targeting, I don't know how different the game would have been if he had stayed in, but that obviously was a big thing, putting in the freshman for him, and that mattered because Georgia got out onto the edge, and Bennett was able to evade the pocket a lot more. He had some really terrible throws. Like, he was objectively awful in this game too, and the difference with him versus Garantano is Garantano had the turnovers when he self-destructed a little bit in the pocket, and Bennett just would like throw these little dive balls away, and he got away with some really bad holding on the second his touchdown run, where there were three holds, and you can go back and watch the tape on that. There were three holds that got him through that that should have been called back. There was some questionable officiating. I'm not still certain what Pruitt was upset about with Georgia's defense messing with Tennessee's offensive line over and over again. I don't know if you picked up on what he was talking about.
I'm not sure what he's mad about either, because I feel like Georgia's been doing that for about 2 years now, yeah, where they just shift everyone at the same time, and it's been messing with offensive lines for the last 2 years. So
it messed with Tennessee's. And
yeah, without
Tennessee
a doubt,
did not have an answer. And that was the thing, is like, Tennessee is not a team that's going, not yet. They don't have the quarterback who can answer when everything falls apart. Part of the reason that Auburn was able to keep it closer when things fell apart versus Tennessee is Bo Nix runs around all the time. So just because Auburn's offensive line got eaten alive by Georgia's defensive front, Bo Nix was able to run around. Like, he has that in his repertoire. Jared Garantano is not he's not an athlete. He's not someone who's going to move around in the pocket when things crumble. It's just not his game. But does that mean he's a bad quarterback? My family lost their mind. Jared Garantano stinks. He shouldn't be starting against Kentucky. Garantano's awful. This is why we shouldn't play. Like, he won 8 straight for a reason. Like, he's still solid. I'm not saying Jared Garantano is the answer, but I'm saying Jared Garantano was not the reason that they lost this game today. Like, it was the depth. Like, Tennessee did not have the depth, and their 4 or 5 stars on the offensive line did not come to play. Mays, this was a big moment for him, did not come to play. And that was the game. Georgia's, like, Monty Rice is just a monster, and Walker and Ojuli, whatever his name is, was great. I wasn't impressed with Georgia's DBs. I think they might be a little overrated. Palmer mossed. I think, was it Campbell? Who did he moss in this game?
That was DJ Daniel on that play. I think he may have gotten
later.
He may have gotten away with a little bit of a push off on that.
Please, get out of here.
There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah,
is
that a fair assessment of this game from my end?
I will start by saying Jared Quarantano is not. He's not terrible. He's Tennessee's best quarterback. So I don't know if you like who you would rather have starting.
Yeah, Maurer's not changing that game.
He's not good. He's not like a good player, but he's the best Tennessee has.
He's B plus.
He's fine. But this is kind of what I was saying. Like, with all the pressure that Georgia's been able to create, Bo Nix is the only reason that we didn't have 8 sacks against Auburn week before. So I think Quarantano, you saw how different just a normal, and he has a little bit of mobility, you know, but
he does
just a normal quarterback.
He looks like he should be mobile. He looks like he should be an athlete, but he's not. He is not comfortable scrambling. He's just not.
Yeah.
That's not who he is.
So Georgia just got after him. And I feel like it's one thing to get sacks. It's another thing to fumble 3 times like he did. So he's got to hold on to the ball, but I will strongly disagree with your perception of the first half, that Tennessee was able to do some things in the first half. I don't think Tennessee really did anything in the first half. I think really
the
it was
second quarter play. Was literally all Tennessee. They had a goal line stand on defense. The defense stepped up big. You had 2 big bombs to Palmer. Like, they were able to move the football up and down the field.
I mean, when you talk about the offensive line, you're saying the offensive line winning some battles in the first half, but didn't win any in the second half.
Yes.
I think Tennessee essentially had one offensive drive that was successful at all, because I would honestly say, next to the Justin Fields fake punt against Alabama in the SEC championship, that going for it on 4th and 1 on their own 30-yard line yesterday, that was the worst decision Kirby Smart has made as a head coach. Like, you have an offense that can't do anything against you. You gifted them 7 points on the second play of the game with that bad snap. So that's just 7 points that Tennessee did nothing essentially to earn. And then on top of that,
also,
you're going to
just talk about Bennett, what he was doing there. We don't talk enough because Georgia won the football game, but if they had lost by a touchdown, like him trying to like,
just bite the bullet.
Yeah. What are you doing?
You got to bite the bullet on that thing, man. He's trying to,
that
he looked around. He
There's no reason that should not have been a safety. Play.
Oh, and even that, it didn't even have to be a safety. If he just dives on it on the 3-yard line, yeah, you punt from your own end zone, play the field position game, you know, it's like you just live to play another day. But yeah, that was just an atrocious way to start the game. And I'll agree with you, Stetson Bennett did not look great. He missed multiple throws. He clearly has limited arm strength.
Do you know what's easy? When Kiaris Jackson beats our corners on inside slants, like, great. That's what Shai Smith did in week one. That's what Mizzou did a little bit well. Like, there's no answer for whatever reason. And when they play zone and they send people back, and like that little crease in the middle of the field is where Bennett thrives, and Kiaris Jackson just killed them in there. And that,
yeah, and I'll give him that. Those quick passes in the middle of the field, it's not easy to just to throw in the middle of the field. There's a lot of traffic in there, and he does that well. But when you see like him on the run trying to throw a 40-50 yard bomb, I mean,
it's
he underthrew
short.
That.
Yeah,
he underthrew that pass to Pickens. Yeah, even the touchdown to Kiaris Jackson was a duck. And George Pickens, I mean, he had to come back 10-15 yards for that when they got the pass interference. That was just a terrible looking throw. But yeah, I feel like Georgia was really the reason Tennessee was in this game in the first half. Mm-hmm. I can't get over a team that can't move the ball on you. Why even risk giving them the ball at your own 30-yard line? And then you gave Tennessee a little bit of confidence, like they could play with you. And really,
also,
I would
almost
say,
messed that up and gave y'all fourth down. Or gave y'all a fourth down repeat. That was insane. Like they almost called the playback.
Well, I don't understand the logic, if I'm being honest. Like, if it's a procedure play, an illegal procedure, illegal motion, whatever they called, but if that's a pre-snap penalty, right? Mm-hmm. So wouldn't that mean the play never happened?
But that's the thing. The play happened. No one heard the whistle, and they did the play, and the play happened.
But if you're calling a penalty before the play, then that should negate the play happening.
I don't think they called it, though. That's the thing.
Clearly, it didn't matter, but
yeah.
Yeah, I think Georgia's defense is just so dominant. I would almost say last year's performance, Tennessee had a better offensive performance than in this game. Like, they at least did a little something. They had like over 300 yards of total offense.
Guess who was in there though for that game? It was Maurer.
Yeah, and I mean, they had over 70 yards rushing. Like,
because Maurer runs around. Maurer is active. He's got some Bo Nix to him. Like, he runs around as a crazy madman, not accurate and not someone coaches would be comfortable with. And yeah, he's a better recipe to be in a game. Georgia, you have to have a mobile quarterback, I think, at this point. I think that's what we know for sure. If you're going to beat Georgia this year, you have to have a mobile guy.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. This defense is just so fast and allowing negative 1 yards on the ground and five sacks, getting picks, forcing fumbles. Like, this defense, like, they flex their muscles for sure in this one. Like, and even everyone, even mainstream media, is talking about it. Just like, they're like the only, they appear to be the only good defense in the SEC and one of the only good defenses in college football right now.
Can I tell you why I'm actually okay with this Georgia loss?
please tell me why you're okay with this.
So Georgia plays Bama next week on the road. So that's a loss. So they're going to get their comeuppance next week. But they're also in the driver's seat.
They already played the game?
They go, oh yeah. Let's keep betting on teams who are coached by Nick Saban assistants. Let's keep doing that. It's going well. What is it, 21-0 now? Then they get him again in the title game. This is a season where Georgia is going to get Bama twice. And Kirby losing to Saban twice in one season makes me very happy. So the fact that Pruitt will avoid going down to Saban twice this year, and that honor will go to the Georgia Bulldogs, and Stetson Bennett going down twice to the Alabama Crimson Tide makes me happy. Like, it makes me happy
that
Georgia
shows,
gets those two losses.
Just shows where your mentality is at right now. Tennessee's not ready for the big
No,
stage.
We're not.
You're not mentally ready to be there. Georgia's
it's
ready
not
for it.
It has nothing to do with mental. It's depth. It's 100% depth. Like, Georgia's depth on both sides of the ball just still outpaces Tennessee. Tennessee's not there. The recruiting classes are picking up, but they're just not there on both sides of the ball.
We'll see.
Keno Milton's a good example of this, of just the other guy, McIntosh, Milton, it didn't matter. You could throw in anybody. Georgia's still set, and Georgia's still a force in the class of the SEC East.
And those top three running backs got 38 carries, and Zamir White got 22 of them.
I would definitely 6 yards.
He 22 for 50. All right,
I can go down my notes of White run 2nd and 12, White run 3rd and 5, White run.
It really was. I mean, and I don't know. He's shown flashes. You know, he looked a lot better against Auburn last week. I don't know how much I want to blame Zamir White for it. But why are you running up the middle?
What are these shotgun draws up the middle? Those never work.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia was struggling to run the ball at times in the first, and it really did. It seemed so predictable. It felt like I was watching 2019 Georgia for a minute. It's like Stetson Bennett's got some mobility, man. Like, we need to be doing something. Like, call some zone reads. Like, he needs to keep it here and there. I actually talked to my brother at halftime, and that was like one of the things. He's like, why does he not keep it sometimes? Like, keep the defense honest. And one of the first possessions of the second half, he kept one and got a first down out of it. And it really got Georgia's offense moving. But yeah, I definitely think you're going to see Kenny McIntosh and Kendall Milton get a bigger share of those carries next week. Because Zamir White, I haven't given up on him that he's not good, but it looks like those other two just run with a better – Kenny McIntosh just has better vision, it looks like, and he just looks to hit the hole, and I don't know. Zamir White just seems to run right into a crowd and was having a lot of trouble running on Saturday.
Yeah, but Georgia won, and it's going to be very difficult to beat Georgia. And thankfully, they have Alabama on the schedule probably twice, so that is something to look forward to. But anyway, Tennessee moves on to a home game against Kentucky next week, so they'll bounce back to 3-1, and then Georgia goes to 3-1 as well. So we'll be back tied in the standings, just like the universe would have preferred. Saturday night.
You're really counting those chips, all right?
Georgia's got a shot. Definitely go ahead and pencil in. Well, I'll go ahead and lock that one up on Thursday. Yeah, no, okay. That's great.
All right, I'm loving this. I'm loving the disrespect so early in the week.
Before we continue, though, let's get through our standings. How did this week unfold for you and I?
Oh man, if only the Georgia-Tennessee outcome was the only bad news of your weekend, Chase. This was not your best week for the pick'em. I'll just get to it. I noticed my pick'em this week, I didn't have any differences in against the spread and overall. I just took someone, I was taking them all the way. So I went 6-4 overall, 6-4 against the spread. You, on the other hand, sir, went 3-7 against the spread.
Oh.
Not great, but overall you went 1-9.
No.
1-9, sir. That is not what we like to see. Clemson was your only win.
That's insane.
Yeah, and then who are the two? TCU, or you had Kansas State covering the spread, and the other one was you had NC State covering the spread, but you had Virginia and TCU winning those games, which they did not do. But yeah, so it was a little rough week, and now on the season, I got leads in both. I got a slight lead against the spread, 27-23. You are 26-24 against the spread, and then overall I'm 33-18 to your 26-25. But you know, as Kirby Smart says, humility is a week away. So now you just gotta trust the process. I'm not celebrating anything yet. I know it's a long season, but I got a nice lead so far.
I really got to bounce back. I didn't think I was that bad. I knew going into today that I did not do well this weekend. I did not know I did 1-9 badly. That is a different thing entirely.
I just wanted to check on you. You know, after doing so poorly and the pick'em, Tennessee lost, you know, I just want to make sure you're doing all right up there.
It's
because I care.
It's not great. Yeah, well, let's talk about Clemson, the game I got right this weekend. Clemson beats Miami 42-17. They improved to 4-0. Miami falls to 3-1. Kind of like the Tennessee-Georgia game in a way, where it's just Miami was cute. They're not number 7 cute. And Travis Etienne is not fair. Trevor Lawrence is just wasting his time with Clemson for the foreseeable future. There wasn't a lot to take away. Derek King, we can go ahead and probably cancel off the Heisman year for him. Like, that's probably it for that run. But, yeah, what were your thoughts about Clemson curb-stomping Miami at home?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this game went exactly as I thought. Other than the fact that I thought Derek King would make some plays to keep them in the game, it's like they were really just in the game because of that block punt or the block field goal at the end of the first half there. Just give them a 21-10. It kind of looked like they were being competitive, but I mean, they really had that block field goal for a touchdown. And then I think like a 40 or 50 yard pass play at one point on their one touchdown drive in the fourth quarter. Those are essentially the only two good plays for Miami the entire game. Clemson just dominated. Like you said, Travis Etienne is just, he's just too much for every opponent Clemson goes up against. Trevor Lawrence, it's not even really fair. Clemson just, I feel like we see these rankings all the time, and we like convince ourselves, we're like, oh, this team's playing Clemson in a couple weeks. I wonder if they got what it takes, and they kind of inch their way up the rankings, and we kind of convince ourselves by the time of the game that like this is going to be a good game for Clemson, but it's really not. Clemson's just going to destroy anyone they play in the ACC, and it's maybe anyone in college football. We don't know about the best of the best in the other conferences playing Clemson, but we know that the best that the ACC has to offer is just, it's never going to have to be Clemson. They were dominant. I mean, Miami really did nothing offensively.
Yeah, but Miami will be fine. They'll bounce back. It's just they're in that tier two with North Carolina and everybody else. A team, I was wrong about North Carolina, and we'll get to them in a second. Maybe the game of the week, Alabama goes on the road in Mississippi. One thing that I've learned for sure, the team that beats the assistant that beats Saban for the first time will be an offensive assistant, whether it's Steve Sarkisian when he goes back to USC or something, or Mike Locksley at Maryland in a crazy upset. Like, it's going to be one of his former offensive assistants if Brian Dabble gets some sort of college job. That is something that I'm very much convinced of. It's not going to be a defensive-minded guy. It's not going to be someone who used to coach the defense. Like, he's just always going to be a step ahead on that front, and he's always going to be able to win those, and he's going to curb stomp whoever. Lane Kiffin gave Saban all kinds of problems offensively. Lane Kiffin, they scored 7, 14, 14, 13. Bama just scored 21-21 in the second half. That was just a little bit more. Mac Jones, 28-32, 417 yards, 2 TDs. Najee Harris was just an absolute monster. 23 carries, 206 yards, 5 touchdowns. Just like, what is happening? Then Kenny Yeboah is going to be a dude. 7 receptions, 181 yards, 2 TDs. Matt Corral was referred to, I saw on Twitter, as Chad Kelly Light, or Chad Kelly Light. And I like that. Corral's good. And Kiffin's already
just what does that mean, Chad Kelly Light?
The way he plays, Chad Kelly was just like a gamer and just undersized, ran around, did a
filled
lot of
with,
he
made piss vinegar.
Yeah, and he made Ole Miss's offense fun. And Matt Corral makes Ole Miss's offense fun. And they're gonna be fun all year. Ole Miss is probably the most fun team in the SEC. And that offense is legit. That defense with DJ Durkin is atrocious. I really can't believe just how bad that Ole Miss defense is. I think, did you see that Roger Sherman tweet about this game?
I did not.
So Alabama accumulated every possible yard they could have, except for like 41 yards total. So like snap, they like the only yardage they left on the table from when they had the ball was like 41 yards.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I noticed that's basically in the second half, even Alabama didn't really get many stops. It was just Ole Miss kind of stopped themselves on that one drive where they had the bad snap on the third down. It's like Alabama just had 6 drives in the second half, 6 touchdowns. Ole Miss scored on every drive too, but they unfortunately had to settle for some field goals. So Like you said, Najee Harris, he's a cheat code. Honestly, I think that's a term you love to say. Is this guy's a cheat code? I don't know why he came back for his senior year at Alabama. He had nothing to prove to me, but maybe he's showing everybody that he is legit, a first round workhorse running back. Because he was my stud of the week this week. 23 carries, 206 yards, 5 touchdowns. Also had three catches for 42 yards through the air. Like, after he fumbled that one on the goal line that got Ole Miss the ball, I don't know if they tackled him again after that. Like, I swear every single one-on-one tackle Najee Harris had, he just slid off the dude. Like, he just, this guy is just a straight beast. And I think this is what makes Alabama's offense so good, because there are so many of these teams this year, Ole Miss clearly included, and Florida, that can just air it out with the best of them, and their passing offenses are nearly unstoppable. But to have Najee Harris go with that unstoppable passing offense, it makes this Alabama defense, like, or Alabama offense, like, just almost unguardable. And I got to give you some props, because Matt Corral, you were hyping up in the preseason. You had this as a preseason upset, Ole Miss beating Alabama. And, man, they gave him a game. Matt Corral, he's a baller. He was running around making plays. I think what was more surprising than anything is just how Ole Miss was able to run on Alabama. I mean, to have 268 rushing yards against a Saban defense, like.
Well, apparently they knew the plays, or they knew the signals, is what Saban assumes.
I did see something about that. I feel like it would be surprising.
It would not be surprising.
He seemed like he tried to kind of back it up. Like, I'm not saying that's illegal. Yeah. Like, it's like, I mean, a lot of people do that, but.
Yeah, no, that's on you. Then change your signals. What did you think Lane Kiffin was going to do? He coached.
I feel like he instantly realized how salty he kind of sounded.
And you won the game.
Yeah, without a doubt. But, like, what do we make of this? Like, is the gut reaction to this game that, wow, Kiffin's building something, this Ole Miss offense is ridiculous? Or is it, like, that Alabama's defense is questionable? Like, not that Alabama's offense isn't just ridiculous as well. I mean, they have probably the best offense in college football we've seen so far. They are Clemson. But what do we make of this, of the Alabama defense?
It's hard to say, because I think Ole Miss's offense might be the best in the conference outside of Florida. They're the best in the West, I think. Florida is right there, but they went toe-to-toe offensively with Florida. Florida's just a little bit better. Ole Miss's offense is legit, and I think Bama's going to struggle against teams like that. But also, this is something that's important that I think a lot of people miss when it comes to defenses that give up a lot of points. Teams, part of the reason the Big 12 has high scoring games is that when you score a lot of points very quickly, and the way Lincoln Riley scores is he scores quick. They're not like 12 play, 7 minute drives. They are built on explosive plays. Most of the Big 12, the Air Raid, the Baylors of the world, they're built on explosive plays. So when your offenses are so good, where you score 40 something points a game, the defense is going to be on the field a lot more than other teams. The SEC used to be able to be under center all the time and I form, drag it out. The amount of possessions that the other team was getting was drastically different than the amount of possessions that teams are getting now in the SEC. So scoring can be up across the board with so many teams running Baylor style air raid. I mean, Leach is now literally in this conference. And I think you cannot look at points anymore. I think that's just a lazy way of looking at it. You got to look at possessions. You got to look at what they're allowing per play. You got to look at just things like that. There's just more to defense at this point, especially in the SEC, than yardage. And I don't know. I think Bama's defense is better than it was a year ago, and I think they'll probably regroup. But I think Georgia is very clearly ahead of Bama defensively. But I also think it's not like Tennessee and Auburn's offenses are anywhere close to Ole Miss at this point. Ole Miss is a better offense than both of them, and it's really not even close.
And I would agree with that. And I think in general, that's definitely true. If your offense is scoring quickly, you're just having your defense be on the field for more possessions, more time in the game, you're going to give up more points. But just looking at each possession, like Ole Miss had success every. So if I would agree with you, if it was like Ole Miss just getting so many possessions, some are punts, some of them are touchdowns, but they're still just getting a lot of points. I mean, if you look at like the second and third quarter, it was just touchdown, 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 touchdown. And they were just, they were moving it at will on this Alabama defense. So having over 600 yards of offense on an Alabama defense is just something we've never seen before. So I feel like it's worth noting, because I don't think it's just about the offense kind of dictating the pace of the game that you still give up 48 points. You know, if you're good on defense, you're going to get more stops than they got on Saturday. But the only thing, what could be the case moving forward is that there might not be anyone else on Alabama's schedule that's able to replicate what Ole Miss was doing. Maybe Ole Miss is the best offense they face this season. It'll still remain to be seen, but you got to worry about giving up 48 points to anybody really in a college football game, in a game that didn't go to overtime or anything.
Yeah, well, Ole Miss is fine. They're moving in the right direction. Bama will be fine. That offense is just, I don't think we're going to see Bryce Young this year, right? Like, that's, Mac Jones is going to be the quarterback for the
Bulls. See, man, if Georgia jumps on him in the first half, we know they have a tendency to bring in that backup quarterback to beat the Bulldogs.
That would be delightful, but I think this Georgia offense is just different than those previous Georgia offenses. Like this,
man, I would really be able to handle that. I would not be able to handle that if Georgia's up 14-3 at the half on Saturday and they bring in Bryce Young and he goes off in the second half. I surely Kirby's preparing for two quarterbacks at this point. It can't happen that too many times to him.
Texas A&M, number 21 in the nation, hosts Florida this weekend, number 4. Texas A&M sneaks one out, 41-38 off a bad turnover by Florida. That leads to the game-winning field goal late. Texas A&M comes back in this game to knock off the Gators. Kellen Mond goes for 25-35, 338 yards, 3 touchdowns. My dude of the week, though. My stud of the week, Matt Green. Isaiah Spiller, 27 carries, 174 yards, 2 touchdowns. Texas A&M's offense is back. I have been very hard on them. We have been very hard on this Aggie team this year. This is the kind of game they had to win, and this is the offensive explosion that we wanted to see all year long. The last couple of years of the Kellen Mond experience in College Station, and I thought Isaiah Spiller was incredible in this game. That dude is just good, and Kellen Mond was solid, and this was a great win, and he was emotional, and this was Jimbo being as emotional as he was, because it's like, it's their first big program win. Pruitt's going to be like this when they... I mean, actually, I don't know. Pruitt's not really the happiest guy, so he probably won't be like Jimbo in his reaction to beating whoever it is first. But yeah, I thought this was a great win. Florida's defense... I love Florida Twitter. Did you see who they kept updating as, like, the next DC at Florida?
I did not.
Dan Quinn. The pictures of Dan Quinn when he was at DC one year, so just, like... Dan Quinn's coming, so that's the new savior for Third and Grantham. But Florida's offense is still fantastic, and that defense can't stop. Anyway, we talk about bad defenses, like
Third and Grantham,
it's atrocious, and it's got to be so aggravating if you're a Gator fan, because like you finally have a good offense again. Like, we forget how long it's been since Florida had a fun offense. It's been almost a decade. Like, the Urban Meyer, Dan Mullen era has almost been a decade ago. That didn't even end well. Remember the last year of the Urban Meyer stuff with Steve Adazio? That offense was a train wreck.
It was John Brantley. Was he
the last year? Like, this offense has been terrible for 10 years. And Florida not having a good offense is just super depressing and awful. And they finally have it. They have it, one of the best offenses in the country. And it doesn't matter because now the defense sucks. And I would just be banging my head against the wall if I was a Gator fan, because everything was laid out for you this year. Everything. And
yeah, and this proved, I think we talked about this before the season starts, Florida was one of the teams that was hurt the most by the post-COVID schedule, because they had such an easy rotation coming from the West this year, and especially getting their locked rivalry being an LSU team that clearly appears to be down. And Texas A&M is one of those teams that appeared on their schedule with the expanded 10-game SEC schedule. And I think I blame myself for not picking this game, because like you said, the third in Grantham reared its ugly head again. Texas A&M was 12 of 15 on third downs, had 543 yards of total offense, 205 rushing yards. But we all know that defense travels, right? When a team has a defense, they can go anywhere, anytime, and win a game. But we knew Florida's defense was suspect. You know, we knew that this was the crossroads for Jimbo Fisher. They had their backs up against the wall. Like, this is like his entire legacy at Texas A&M was almost on the line in this game. And now we just knew Texas A&M had so much to play for, and Florida has struggled to stop anybody going into a hostile environment. I felt like I would have been a Georgia homer picking against Florida to win this game, but I almost blame myself for not picking this. It had so much of the recipe for an upset, and it changes everything for Jimbo Fisher. I mean, if you just look at the SEC West now, this team can realistically go 9-1, 8-2, and that is going to change the entire narrative of where Texas A&M is in the hierarchy of the SEC West. You know, if they beat Auburn, if they beat LSU this year, so it's very interesting to me. And what was most telling? Were you aware of the comments that Brenton Cox made last week during the game or during the preparation for this game?
I was not.
So Brenton Cox, I just see some random story on, I don't know, Wednesday or Thursday, that Brenton Cox says the UGA game is personal for him this year. Of course, Brenton Cox being the defensive end, the transferred from Georgia, now he's playing for Florida. And I should have looked at that comment more, that he says he's like excited to get the win in Jacksonville. That game's going to be personal for him. It's like, bro, Jacksonville is like four games away. You're about to go play a ranked team on the road in maybe the biggest stadium. Are they the biggest stadium in the SEC now? It's like 110,000. Yes, and the biggest stadium in the SEC. And you're talking about Georgia? Like, you're talking about, like, that just shows where the focus was. That's one player on the team. You know, it could be too big of a reaction for just one player, but I think that speaks volumes to, you know, how ready Florida was in this game, and their defense clearly did not show up in this game for a third straight week.
Yeah. I don't know what you do here with Florida. Like, their offense is going to keep them at 9-10 win territory, but it's just going to be this is going to be one of the seasons that just is going to take some time for Florida fans to get over. It's not over. You can still beat Georgia and go to the SEC title game and all that, but I don't know. That is it's a bad loss and a big win for Texas A&M.
And it's true. And if Florida goes 9-1 this year and loses to Georgia, it's like, you know, you didn't get to the SEC championship for another season. It's disappointing, but it's also like, it's a one loss season, but now there's just so much more pressure on that game in Jacksonville, and it's an 8-2 season where you lose to Georgia. It's not feeling like that same. It doesn't feel like the arrow's pointed up as much. So I don't know. That could be huge. And also, did you see Dan Mullen's comments after this game?
I would 90,000 people.
Like, what is this guy talking about? He thinks the road crowd impacted the 25% filled Kyle Field is what did it.
I will say Kyle Field looked a little more filled than other stadiums I saw this weekend.
That could be true, but I mean, give it at absolute most like 30,000, 35, yeah. Absolute most 40,000 people.
We need to have a watch of who looks the most filled every week. Which stadium?
Which we should start doing that. But like, it's the SEC, man. Like, half the stadiums you go into are 90,000 seat stadiums that are just packed out with rowdy fans. Like, what are you really blaming this loss on 25,000-30,000 Texas A&M fans? Like, come on, man. That's just a bad look. Say that on your Monday press conference. Don't say that right after the game's over.
I agree. Florida State goes on the road to Notre Dame and fall to 1-3. Notre Dame knocks off the Seminoles 42-26. This game is not as close as it looks in the score. Notre Dame did whatever they wanted offensively early on in this game. Kyren Williams, 19 carries, 185 yards, 2 TDs. I will say, I don't know if you feel this way. My biggest takeaway watching back this game this morning, Ian Book still good enough to keep Notre Dame in the playoff hunt, but also Florida State's moving in the right direction. Jordan Travis is a big difference than Blackman under center. And I think Tremarion Terry is going to be good. I like their weapons outside. I think they're fighting and they're showing fight. Like, they were up 17-14 after one here. And obviously they end up getting blown out. But I thought Florida State fought hard early, and I think they don't have the bodies yet to hang with this team like Notre Dame or Clemson or Miami or any of those teams. But I do think this was a positive loss for the Seminoles. Is that fair?
Man, that's how far Florida State's fallen, huh? We're talking about positive losses. But no, you're definitely right. It's like this was like a normal, like a regular way to lose a game.
Yeah,
it's like this is a team that's better than you, and you fought hard. And yeah, I definitely was impressed that Florida State at least hung around in this game for the first half before Notre Dame just really blew them away. But it's crazy to me that that's where we are with Florida State now. But yeah, put some respect on my guy Ian Book's name, man. I told you, Ian Book is solid. All right, you want to talk about Guarantano or over here, like Ian Book is a legit college football quarterback. Like, I don't know if this guy's going to be anything in the NFL, but he's got that guy that he's just one of those guys who's just got those kind of gamer abilities. He makes some plays with his legs. He's not the best. He didn't have the best arm, but I mean, he's accurate quarterback. I feel like Ian Book, he's a good enough quarterback to win a national championship. I'll say that. Like, Notre Dame doesn't have everything else you need to win a championship. But like, if Georgia had Ian Book as their quarterback right now, I feel like they might be the front runner to win the national championship.
Is Clemson dead?
I'm saying Ian Book is just that solid of a quarterback. Uh-huh. I mean, Ian Book is essentially like a legitimate version of Stetson Bennett. Like, right, Stetson Bennett runs around and like makes those
Ian
plays.
Book does not make them the front runner. Let's calm down there, sir.
I'm saying Georgia is a team that's essentially like almost winning despite their quarterback. Not that Stetson Bennett hasn't been solid, but he's just so kind of mediocre. Like,
yeah,
he's
the way people are talking about him is going to drive me nuts all season long.
I mean, because his story is still amazing.
He was on a scout team. Did you know he mirrored Baker Mayfield?
Hey, man, at least we had to deal with those Jake Fromm Little League World Series stories for 3 years. Oh, did you know he was committed to Alabama? Oh, he was in the Little League World Series? No, I hadn't. Yeah, I've literally known this for 3 years. We talk about it every single game. But no, I'm just saying Ian Book is solid. Like, if Notre Dame doesn't have the pieces to win a national championship, but with everything in line, like a good team that's got all the good pieces, like Ian Book is a fine quarterback. That's the only point I'm making. He's like just a better version of that kind of Bo Nix kind of player, like that guy who just kind of runs around and makes plays. He's just a more legit version of that.
Virginia Tech goes to North Carolina with a third of their team missing, and fall 45-56 at North Carolina. North Carolina got out to a 21-0 lead here, and Virginia Tech had a big comeback in the second half, but they were just too far down to really, really come back in this game. Sam Howell was solid, 18-23, very accurate, 3 TDs. Michael Carter ran all over him, but Hendon Hooker, did he get taken out? Like, what happened in this game? Because he only went 7-13, I think. Did he get pulled or did he get hurt?
I think he may have got hurt. I was wondering the same thing. Because they were getting blasted early in this game and came back. And I know he had a rushing touchdown at one point. But yeah, North Carolina just ran all over him. I feel like I got to admit when I'm wrong. And North Carolina really silenced some critics this week. I think everyone was saying that Virginia Tech was one of the more underrated teams in college football, and that North Carolina was one of the more overrated teams in college football. And I mean, they just straight came out and just pounded them. I mean, almost 400 yards on the ground, and Sam Howell had a super efficient game. Their offense seemingly scored at will.
Auburn at home holds off the Arkansas Razorbacks 30-28. Arkansas should have won this game. And 1-2 Auburn, like we talked about this, if they blew this game to Arkansas at home, like Gus is done, right? Like this is it. Chad Morris's former team, Sam Pittman's already done 10 times what Chad Morris did over 2 years at Arkansas. Like they've all bought in. Felipe Franks looked good in this game. 4 TDs through the air. Accurate. Tank Bigsby is an absolute monster. Did you see that catch and run he had in this game where he just bounced off like 9 different guys and had this like 45-yard gain? Like he's a monster. He's going to be the next great Auburn back. But yeah.
Yeah, Tank Bigsby's a beast.
Auburn should have lost this game. He fumbled. Like he fell, he dropped the ball, then he spiked it, but he can't spike it at that point. And the SEC released a statement after, and it was still unclear and ambiguous. And I'm just like, it's one of those where you just have to go, when you're at home watching this, did you immediately go, that doesn't count, that should be blown dead, or that's a fumble? What was your instant reaction? Because my instant reaction was like, that's a fumble.
Yeah, well, and my instant reaction was, you know, you've seen that before where they fumble the snap that you can't ground it at that, or you can't spike it at that point. No. That I knew it was going to be grounding. And then it wasn't until you saw the replay that you're like, wait, he threw that backwards.
Right.
Like, that's got to be a fumble. Like, I was struggling with this one because it's like when they released that statement, like, and when they talked to the SEC head of officiating or whatever, he was saying that if more players had continued to play, then they could say that there was an immediate recovery and still give Arkansas the ball. But because only like 2 or 3 guys kept playing, it was like essentially the play stopped. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense at all. Like if these guys are all doing the wrong thing, but it's still a live ball, there were people going after it, and Arkansas did seemingly immediately recover it. But I struggle with it because like the kind of like the common sense perspective, like the for all intents and purposes, like technically, I feel like you're right, and Auburn or Arkansas should have won this game. But for what was actually happening in the game, like, Auburn set up a game-winning field goal and was spiking it. You know what I mean? So it's like Auburn kind of deserved the outcome of the game, even though they did the wrong thing, even though technically it should have been a live ball, it should have been a fumble, and Arkansas should have recovered. If I was an Arkansas fan, I'm sure I would be so pissed off still this morning. But it seems like for all intents and purposes, like the justified outcome still happened. I don't know. That's like such a neutral perspective, and I know I would feel different if I was a fan of one of these two teams. But what do you think about that?
That's fair. Either way, this is not a win for Auburn. Like, I'm not happy if I'm an Auburn fan right now. Like, I don't feel good either way.
No.
Like, that felt like a loss to me. I'm just like, oh, this offense, still not fixed.
This is probably the best game of Felipe Franks' career, honestly. Felipe Franks was out there balling. But what I thought was funny is that Gus Malzahn, before the game, you know, it's like, he probably just got caught up in coach speak, but it's like, he's like, you know, this Arkansas, they're a much better coach team than they were a year ago. And it's like, well, you know, their coach a year ago is now on your staff.
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean? But I thought that was funny, but yeah, Arkansas, I mean, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's not that bad of a win. If Arkansas takes every team they play to the brink this year, minus probably Alabama, then maybe it isn't. Maybe it's not embarrassing to beat Arkansas by two points. You know, maybe time will tell on that, because they've looked a lot better so far this year.
Missouri hosted, due to the hurricane, an LSU team that is still, as of this recording, getting their defense called by Bo Pelini. Mizzou drops 45 on LSU and wins 45-41 here. I watched this Mizzou team last week. This blew my mind. LSU's defense has too much talent, regardless of learning a new system. There's no excuse. Like, look, I told you, Connor Bazelak is a dude. I told you this in the podcast last week. Like, Tennessee flexed their muscles, limiting him and limiting Larry Roundtree a week ago. Like, not every team can do that. Connor Bazelak goes 29 of 34, 406 yards. He averaged 11.9 yards through the air. He was averaging a first down per attempt and didn't throw a pick, 4 TDs. He was very comfortable all game long. I don't know. And then Terrence Marshall, whatever, can we give stud of the week to, like, the losing stud of the week? Terrence Marshall Jr.
He looked unguardable.
Going 11 receptions for 235 yards and 3 TDs and LSU lost. Oh.
Man, if it was 236, they would have won this game. If he would have found a way to just barely get in the end zone on that play late, that you got pushed out at the one.
What do you make of this? This LSU, we talk about Florida's defense. I think LSU's is worse.
I feel like you'd have to. It's tough because I feel like Florida's at least played Texas A&M and Ole Miss, who could be two of the better offenses in the SEC. It's like LSU is starting the season with Mississippi State, Vanderbilt, and Missouri. And they're 1-2. Like, man, you know, I'm getting some satisfaction out of this on my Ed Orgeron hate in the preseason. Like, I just, like you said, there's no excuse for it. I don't care how many starters you lost from your team last year. Missouri shouldn't be able to beat LSU. Like, they shouldn't. They shouldn't be able to have 400 yards passing, almost 200 yards rushing. Like, they didn't stop them at all in this game. And even this game showed you, like, you got to play a little bit of defense. Like, Missouri gave up 41 points, but when it comes down to it, they got that goal line stand. The defense dialed it up. That was such an intense ending to this game. I was frantically trying to, like, keep up with it as the Georgia-Tennessee game was starting. It was an insane finish. I'm shocked that Missouri was able to do this. I think it's the first big win of the Eli Drinkwitz era. Maybe it means something. And honestly, I also feel like this is a good case for the SEC East being better than the SEC West this year. If you got someone like Missouri knocking off LSU, like that's a huge upset, and I don't think anybody saw this coming.
So I highly encourage you to look at how Mizzou dinked and dunked. We need to come up with a nickname for the Drinkwitz dink and dunking. How to brand that, because that is how they're going to play. They're never going to go downfield. And it just, Bazelak was doing what he did against Tennessee, just to much better results. And it's amazing. Like, he spreads the ball around. It's an equal opportunity offense. LSU is just like, hey, where's our guys? That is their offense. And Mizzou is like, you know what? I'm going to do 3 passes here, 3 passes there, 3 passes there, 3 passes there. It's a equality for all offense. And they never take shots. They're very nice. Like, they're the khaki pants offense of the SEC. And they ripped LSU to shreds. So, shout out to Eli Drinkwitz for a big first SEC win. On to the Big 12.
But also,
yes.
Also, before we move on to the Big 12, how do you be feeling as a member of this LSU team? And you got Ja'Marr Chase over there. I guess he's in the locker room. I guess
he hasn't
he's in
solved
practice.
The defense problems.
That's true, but it's like, I feel like you're going through some hard times right now, and you got players out there that they're choosing not to participate on your team. Like, I wonder if this could, like, kind of culturally affect, like, LSU and, like, what they have going on. He's not even on campus anymore.
I
mean, I guess
doubts that anyone.
I guess not. Yeah, I mean, if he's not playing football, I don't really know what he's doing there. He's not playing school anymore.
I don't think he's taking a full load this fall. I don't think he's taking a full load.
You're probably right there. Also, the freshman tight end Eric Gilbert, still salty that Georgia missed out on that 5-star tight end out of Marietta. This dude's a straight freak. He's going to be a baller.
Texas goes to the Red River Shootout. One of my worst picks. Can't believe I did this. I doubted Lincoln Riley as a doofus. Sam Ellinger is a gamer, though. He comes back in the fourth. That's all he does. Like, that dude tries so dang hard, and I feel bad for him because just, it doesn't matter. Texas is just going to be 9-3 forever, I think. And they fall 45-53 in a crazy ending here. He throws a pick to seal it. Spencer Rattler got benched early in this game. What do you make of any? I don't know what to pull from this game. Is Oklahoma okay now? Is Texas just, is this it for the Herman era? Like, Charlie Strong, when he reached this point with Texas, they moved on from him. Like, what do we do here?
Yeah, it's a good point, because I feel like Charlie Strong didn't get a long leash of he didn't get a lot of time to lose at Texas before he got fired. So Tom Herman, I don't really know. I feel like they were equipped almost essentially the same type of buzz as like big time assistants. I guess, you know, he had that offensive hype versus the defensive coach, but it's tough. I felt the exact same way as you watching this game. Like, Sam Ellinger, this felt like his legacy game, right? This felt like this was like the most important game of his career. Like, he was just trying to will this team to victory. 112 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns, 6 total touchdowns in the game. And I guess maybe it is his ultimate legacy game, and he ends it going 1-4 against Oklahoma for his career. Like, I feel like you could just tell how important this game was. It was like for Sam Ellinger going down in like Texas lore, you know, and Texas football history. He'll still have a bunch of career numbers for Texas, because, you know, he's a 4-year starter and everything, but it's like beating Oklahoma is ultimately what you're going to be judged by as a Texas quarterback. And I heard someone before the game say there, when they were given their picks, they're like, I don't really know how to pick this game, but Oklahoma can't lose 3 games in a row. And I, right when I heard that, I was like, I felt so dumb. Like, it's totally right. I felt the exact same way. Like, why did I pick Oklahoma? Oklahoma's not going to lose 3 games in a row. You know, it can't happen. And I wish I would have picked Texas. This was an amazing game. Like, crazy overtime, missing field goals. It was some wild stuff. But I don't know what to make of it moving forward. I guess it means either of these teams can still win the conference with 2 losses. I guess Oklahoma's got a much better shot now with this tiebreaker over Texas. But I guess at 2 losses, it's still not inconceivable for Oklahoma to still be able to beat Big 12 champions.
Yeah, well, Oklahoma rights the ship, and we're all better for it. Last game that we want to get into here before we run through the remainder of this week's slate. Iowa State, this was my, maybe, like, outside of, just the Big 12 as a whole just needs to get canceled, because I talked myself into Texas Tech on the road here, that Iowa State was just going to be that team this year that played up to their competition and played down to the other schools like Louisiana at home. Texas Tech comes in here riding off a big win against Oklahoma. I overthought this, and Iowa State moves to 3-1 and beats the Texas Tech Red Raiders 31-15 to improve to 3-1. Texas Tech falls to 1-3 under Matt Wells. Brock Purdy, another great game for him, 32 for 43, 300 yards, 2 TDs, and Breece Hall continues his dominant effort at 27 carries for a 135 and 2 touchdowns. Is there a case to be made now that Iowa State is the best team in the Big 12?
I think a case can definitely be made for Iowa State being the best team in the Big 12. I mean, with Brock Purdy, he looked good. I mean, we kind of already know he's the one known commodity about their team coming into this season. And I feel like you got to give it up for this defense. I mean, this defense, or this Texas Tech offense, hung, what, 60 points on Texas a couple weeks ago. And they held Texas Tech to 270 total yards and 0-for-10 on third down. And so, I mean, that's about as impressive of a performance as you're going to see in the Big 12, holding someone to 15 points. So I feel like this is a big win for Iowa State. And this game was never even really in doubt. I mean, they just had a comfortable lead the whole way.
All right. The other games that happened this weekend, and you can stop me if you have something to add for any of these games. Tulane falls on Thursday to Houston. Houston wins 49-31 there to get their first win of the season, for their first game of the season. It only took until mid-October to debut for the Houston Tigers, but Daniel Holgorsen starts out great there. This is a fun one. I highly encourage you to check back out. But it wasn't as fun as the Friday night game. The Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets unveiling some navy blue unis with the gold helmets I liked a lot. Jeff Sims under center goes 11-21 for 249 yards, two TDs, and they blow out the Cards of Louisville.
They just look like a so much more legit program now that they have Adidas. It's like it just makes them look like, oh yeah, they're a legitimate D1 program now. It's like I was whatever about those uniforms. They look all right, but yeah, I feel like just now that they have Adidas, Jeff Collins
is good. He's
they're at least looking like a big time Power Five program now. They got a long way to go before they're good, but they're moving in the right direction.
Beating Florida State and Louisville, I think it's a great start to the year two of the Jeff Collins era. All you can really hope for is like 4-6, 3-7, and beating a Louisville team that we would have penciled in before the season as a loss. Trouble in Louisville, I will say.
Yeah, maybe even more of an indictment on Louisville, turning the ball over three times.
Not good. BYU continues their dominance, improving to 4-0. How did I not cover? What was the spread on this? Because I said this was going to be close. I distinctly remember this was going to be close. Jeff Traylor, I'm a big fan of, who I think actually should be the next coach of Texas.
This wasn't in the pick'em.
That's what it is. I just said it in the when we were going over it post pick'em. That's what it was. Because I think if we pulled the tape on the games that weren't in our pick'em, I'd probably go undefeated. And it's a different
story. I'm sure you feel that way.
Zach Wilson improves to 22-30, 292, two TDs. BYU 4-0, 15th in the country. Good for them. Liberty rolls all over a winless UL Monroe team to improve to 4-0. They win 40-7 there. NC State now 3-1. I think they're going to be ranked this week.
Wolfpack, man. I told you, the Road Warriors. That was their third straight road game. They got the road win over Pittsburgh. Now the road win versus Virginia. Don't sleep on the Wolfpack in the ACC.
I've been sleeping on them. So no longer. NC State legitimately good now. South Carolina blows out Vanderbilt, who is by far the worst team in the SEC. They are missing a bunch of players due to COVID. I don't think that would have mattered all that much. They lose 41-7.
Yeah, we owe South Carolina an apology. They were a 13-point favorite. We were like, can they even score 13 points? Like, I don't. So they dropped 41 on Vanderbilt. So I give them their respect.
Will Muschamp, Kate, he saves his job for another week. Duke goes on the road at Syracuse and gets their first win of the season, a game that featured a benching of Chase Brice for him to only come back in and lead the Blue Devils to a 38-24 win.
This is the Greg Paulus Bowl.
Oh, yes.
I know you remember Greg Paulus, right?
Isn't he a coach at Duke now? Or Syracuse? He's a coach at one of the two.
You know, he might be. I would assume Duke because he played basketball at Duke and then just played the 1 year of football at Syracuse, but... Yeah, it was a little throwback for our college basketball fans. What is that? It's probably like 2005, 2006, maybe.
Something
I think
like
he.
That.
I want to say
that
he was
John Shire era.
Oh, you know, I think he played with JJ Redick. So did Redick and Shire overlap? I know him and Josh McRoberts were both like freshmen. In the same year, I want to say he was on that team.
Sheldon Williams
and JJ Redick. Yeah, when they were seniors, and then I think Greg Paulus is a freshman. I want to say that. I'm not 100%. But
Army
moving
beats Citadel 14-9 to improve to 4-1. Would you like to guess how many passes Army's quarterback Jamel Jones threw in this game?
One.
10. He goes 4-for-10, 40% completion.
Wow, 10 passes?
Yeah. Jeff
Army
Monken,
open it up a little bit.
Yeah, opening it up. Central Arkansas, in their 12th game, I feel like, this season, falls 50-27 at Arkansas State. Troy takes care of Texas State, 37-17. BC takes care of Pitt in overtime. The Jeff Hafleys, 3-1. We thought this was going to be close, but we both picked Pitt. And Pitt falls to 3-2. They're blowing their
perfect
season.
Oh, not so fast, sir. I took Boston College Golden Eagles in this one. I did, but I'll be honest. It they got lucky in this one. I don't know if you saw how this one ended with Pitt missing the extra point in overtime. That I just hate to see any college football game end like that.
I think it's amazing.
No, you would think that was amazing. I feel like it's like the worst thing. I just want it to just be decided like by the players on the field. Not that the kicker is not a player, but it's like we just take the extra point for granted. I hate for
Georgia
game
every year from a missed extra point. Like I'd be a very happy man.
Of course, you're sitting on four straight losses right now.
Irrelevant. Kansas State goes on the road and beats the TCU Horned Frogs 21-14. Kansas State improves to 3-1 and 3-0 in the Big 12. So
this was one I felt dumb about. I felt like Kansas State was the better team, but for some reason I was picking TCU. Like I was drinking the Max Duggan Kool-Aid. Kansas State, they've looked like one of the more consistent teams so far in the Big 12.
Middle Tennessee goes to Florida International and gets their first win of the season, improving to 1-4. FIU is now 0-2. Temple plays their first game of the year. These schedules and the games and the records are wild. Navy gets a win, nice bounce back for them in the AAC, winning 31-29. South Florida, Jeff Scott, it's going to take some time, my man, because they lose at home 44-24 to the East Carolina Pirates. Louisiana Tech takes care of UTEP 21-17 in Conference USA. Marshall keeps their unbeaten record intact by going to Western Kentucky and beating the Hilltoppers 38-14.
Marshall's looking legit this year.
They're good. Grant Wells is solid. Brendan Knox is a good running back. I like him. Kentucky takes care of Mississippi State 24-2. Just a crazy score. KJ Costello throws 55 passes and 4 interceptions. Terry Wilson couldn't do anything offensively in this game. They really struggled, but Kentucky's defense, dominant. Just the air raid. Unbelievable 2 weeks for them. Kentucky now travels to Tennessee the next week. So they get a much-needed win there because they were going to fall to 0-4 if they did not. Do you think
Mike Leach and Mississippi State, they regret like how much they celebrated that LSU win now? Like,
did you see
the whole bandwagon and all that stuff? What did he say post game?
Like, there are players he has to get out of there. Like, he's already talking about like getting rid of people after 3 weeks.
Wow. Now I saw it was the first game in his 19 years of coaching where his team did not score an offensive touchdown.
Brutal.
I mean, they didn't score an offensive point. I mean, the defense got a safety, so it's crazy.
Shout
I was
out
not
to the Kentucky defensive lineman who reminded KJ Costello how many picks he had thrown. And that was pretty wild.
That was awesome. I'll say I was a believer in Kentucky this week. I had no idea they were just gonna shut down Mississippi State like this, though. That's crazy. Like, what do we make of this? Kentucky just destroying Mississippi State, a team that beat LSU. Is Kentucky better than LSU? Like, I don't know.
Kentucky
what's
is better
on.
Than LSU. Yes.
Like, this is a wild.
LSU's bad. Football.
Yeah, I mean, if Missouri and Kentucky are better than LSU this year, like, I don't know what's going on.
That is where we're at. All right. You did not reveal your dude of the week.
Oh, my dude of the week. Yeah, I did. It was it was Najee Harris.
Oh, way to really branch out there.
I mean, I couldn't say anything else watching that game. Like, all I could think is, like, this guy should not be in college right now. This guy should be playing on Sundays. He should be playing for San Francisco or something. He shouldn't be playing for Alabama. And Georgia's going to have to tackle him next week. And I hope we're up for the challenge.
I'm very excited about next week and the calendar we've got ahead, because it's going to be nice. After this weekend, all I want is a nice, simple weekend. This week looks like we're going to get Dan Quinn getting fired and Tennessee getting a much needed bounce back win that I'll be in attendance for against the Kentucky Wildcats. Because if they do fall here, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting week. It seems like LSU Florida is next week, and man, that game feels so much different than we would have thought when the year started. I'm excited for I'm just excited for Georgia Bama, man. This is the regular season game everyone's been waiting for.
I couldn't care less.
Like some people out there, not to be named, aren't giving us a chance. That's all I know. Don't think I didn't catch the shade you threw that it's going to be an offensive coach that beats Saban. All right, I think if there's a coach that beats Saban, Kirby's going to do it, man. He's the closest right now.
But keep dreaming, my man. that's the Georgia fan in ya. My favorite segment of the week. It's time for the Georgia High School Sports Association report. Wild week in the state of Georgia for high school football. Chris County goes to Upson Lee and wins 32-0. Matt, Chris County, are you a believer?
No, I'm not. I think they got lucky this week.
you think so?
It was a good performance, strong performance. But we'll see what they do next week.
Grayson takes care of business at home against the Mill Creek Hawks, 20-13. Grayson looking good.
I told you this is my pick of the week. Mill Creek took them to overtime, but couldn't get the win.
Your North Gwinnett Bulldogs shut out the North Cobb Indians 16-0.
Damn right. Are they really the Indians, North Cobb?
I'm pretty sure. Am I wrong?
I thought we got rid of all those Native American mascots. It says Warriors.
Okay, the North Cobb Warriors. Yeah. I think McEachern still is the Indians then.
Oh, I think you're right about that.
Norcross blows out the Meadow Creek Mustangs 59-14. Meadow Creek still got some work to do, I think. Our team, the team of the podcast, Cook High School, takes care of Brantley County 42-23. The Hornets are looking good.
And why is Cook High School the team of the podcast?
We talk about them a lot, and I think you were a believer early on. You were in on the Cook County bandwagon, as I remember.
Okay. I'll take your word for that one.
Where you and I went to college, to undergrad, the North Hall team, I don't know their mascot, hosted West Hall. There's a lot of Hall County schools outside of Gainesville. North Hall reigned supreme 42-13.
Is North Hall the green one? Are they green?
I think so.
And what is
West is blue.
What is their mascot?
I don't know. Georgia Force Christian. Fall finally to Shambly, the Shambly Bulldogs 27-14. The homeschoolers get school, baby.
Are you proud of that one?
Yeah, I don't like the homeschoolers being able to form a super team. I don't like it.
North Hall is the Trojans, by the way.
Griffin takes care of McIntosh on the road 38-7. I have been to Griffin, Georgia once in my life, and I am good on ever going back.
Hey, you don't talk about our Griffin podcast listeners like that, all right? We got a strong following in Griffin. Remember their AAU team growing up was the Griffin Grasshoppers. I always thought that was cool, playing them in AAU when I was younger.
Buford unloads on Central Gwinnett 51-0. The Black Knights still not great. The pride of Lawrenceville, Georgia. Really struggling out of the gate here.
Yeah, I not much you can do with going against a powerhouse like Buford. You know, they're really flexing their muscles.
Last game, and then we'll wrap up here. Your Decula Falcons, Matt Green, the household that keeps you and your fiance acclimated, engaged in the community. You know what the scuttlebutt is. In Decula, Georgia. How are the Decula residents dealing with a 28-27 thriller of a Friday night victory on the road at Lanier for Decula? What's the
atmosphere man.
Like?
Absolutely electric. big time win over Lanier. Probably the two best teams in the region, I would say, so far this year. Decula and Lanier, that was a big-time heavyweight matchup. just the whole town's glad to get the dub. But the one more I gotta throw in here, the game of the week here, the Alpharetta Raiders going on the road at Harrison. Did you see this one?
I did not. The Harrison, we beat them in a state
Harrison
title game.
Bulldogs.
Yes,
the former Justin Field high school. Alpharetta won 2-0. 2-0. So big time defense being played in that 7A matchup.
Would you rather lose 24-2 or 2-0?
I'd probably go 2-0 because you're at least in the game till the end. But
I think I'd rather lose 24-2. 2 is just like, I don't know. That's crushing. Like, we couldn't get a field goal. A field goal would have won this game. Yeah. Are you kidding me?
2-0. A big seventh inning got him the win.
I want to watch the tape of this. I want to see how that's possible in high school football today. Like, I really want to see how that's possible.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably subpar quarterback play.
But even that, like, I don't know. It's just very hard not to score a lot of points in high school football now.
You hit up the coaches for Harrison and Alvarez. They'll tell you how to get it done.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll love. Hey, how are your offenses this inept that you can't score one offensive touchdown in today's rules and style of play? Explain
please,
to me how this is
please
possible.
Teach me.
Yeah. Teach me your incompetence. Matt Green, that is all I've got. Is there anything you would like to add before we get out of here?
I would like to say, you know, I would like to applaud Chase Thomas here for his sportsmanship in defeat. You know, you were doing some texting early on, you know, first and second quarter. I'm not a big live texting kind of guy, you know, especially when things are going down on my team. I figured I would be polite enough to respond to your text, but once things started going trending in George's direction, I didn't feel the need to rub it into you. I had to get one text to you late Saturday night just to clap back at you a little bit. But I respect your sportsmanship, your professionalism on this podcast. Despite a bad weekend, you still brought your A game to the podcast. That's all the listeners can ask for.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I do it for the people. Matt Green, thank you as always, sir. And we will be
also
back. Yes.
One last thing. I was totally killed it. Greg Paulus, 2005-2006 was his freshman year at Duke, the year JJ Redick won National Player of the Year. That is all. Just gonna hype up my college basketball knowledge as well.
I would have rather have ended on celebrating me, but let's end it on Greg Paulus and his time at Duke. All right, Matt Green, we'll be back Thursday. Thank you as always.
Yes, sir.
All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Did you like what you heard? Did you like what you heard? I think is what I'm trying to say, right? That's what I'm trying to say. That's the correct English. Then guess what? Here's what you do. You go to Apple. You leave 5 stars. You leave a review. You let people know why they should listen to this show. You go to patreon.com/ChaseThomasWriter. You become a member. $5 a month. Go do it. You can do more. I'm not going to say no. Go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com. Read all my stuff. ChaseThomasPodcast/page-11. It's great stuff. Writing every day. Doing the pod every day. Support the best independent sports podcast today. No one's doing what I'm doing. Nobody can touch me. Let's keep this thing moving. Let's keep the lights on. Let's keep getting after it. I'm hyped up. Follow me on Twitter at Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Thank you all for your support as this show continues to grow. We'll be back, yeah, tomorrow. Because guess what? This show is daily, and it's all thanks to you guys. Talk to you soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.